Welcome, everyone. So since you came out here on a really beautiful Sunday afternoon, maybe we'll just... I'll just give you the heart of the teachings. It's a very simple thing. As I often tell people, it's a very, very, very simple thing. The heart of the teaching is simply this. If you want to practice, everybody seems to want something to do. If you want to do something, this is what to do. Rest as awareness. That's the teaching. Three words. If you got that, if you understood what that would mean, then you really wouldn't need anything else. That's the whole of it. That's basically the teaching, that's the method, that's the technique, that's the thing to do. That's it. There's not much to understand about it, is there? Now I can talk on and on and on and on and on about things that seem very complicated or subtle or whatever they may seem, but ultimately that's the core of it. Rest as awareness. Which is different than try to be aware. Does it make sense? It's not an awareness practice where you're trying to be more aware or enhance awareness or even trying to be more present or more here or more now or more aware of eating your food or more aware of the steps you take or more aware of anything. It's not an awareness enhancement practice. In fact, it's not even something that you really do. Most awareness practices in spirituality, what people are told is, okay, this is what you are going to do with awareness. Right? You're going to focus it here, you're going to enhance it here, you're going to keep it in the here and now, you're going to something. Maybe it's if only usually some sort of directive like, what I want you to do is be the witness to everything that arises. But all of that is fundamentally different than rest as awareness. In resting as awareness, it's not a doing. What can you do to rest as awareness? Does that make sense? What can you do if you really look at it? What can you possibly do? Because all of your doing, which would mean efforting, struggle in any way, would be actually not to rest as awareness, but be actually engaged in a process of self-seeking, me trying to do something. You can't do awareness. You can't do consciousness. You can do lots of things. You can do attention, you can focus awareness, that's called attention, giving your attention to something. But I'm not even speaking about giving your attention to something or anything in particular. Just rest as awareness. And to do, in order for that to happen, you have to relinquish trying to understand something, thinking that the basis of spirituality is that there is something that you must understand, when actually the basis of spirituality in the sense of a spirituality that has anything to do with actual spiritual awakening doesn't have to do with what you know. If anything, it has to do with unknowing what you know. Because most people, the problem they have spiritually isn't that they know too little. It's that they know way too much. Right? Most people's mind is like a spiritual New Age bookstore. Crowded with, or a library, you know, that's crowded with books. Or have you ever walked into anybody's house that's really into collecting like books, and there's just like books everywhere, bookshelves, and it's just, you know, it's kind of impressive or silly depending on the way you look at it. But I think a lot of people's minds are like that, and then we continue to think, I do not have the correct piece of knowledge yet. I don't have the correct understanding. If I could just get the right understanding, if I could just figure something out, then everything would be okay. But actually, to rest as awareness, the first thing you relinquish is that whole attempt of the mind trying to understand something. So that's, for most people, that's a big, big, big surrender. It's a big step to stop trying to figure everything out. Because it doesn't take any understanding to rest as awareness, does it? And the reason it doesn't take any understanding to rest as awareness is because awareness is already present. Is it not? Is not awareness the thing that is allowing us to see what we see, hear what you hear, feel what you feel, notice that you have thoughts or a feeling or this or that? Is not every one of our senses only capable of receiving anything because it's flooded with awareness? Right. So is not your experience right now flooded with awareness? Even if you're daydreaming and you suddenly went, whoa, I'm supposed to be listening to this guy. Even if you were daydreaming, weren't you fully aware of your daydream? See, you were fully present, even if you were thinking about something else a moment ago. So awareness actually is continuously flooding all experience. Without awareness, as far as you would be concerned, nothing would be. Right? In fact, there wouldn't even be the notion that nothing would be, because there wouldn't be any awareness to aware that notion. You see, there wouldn't be any consciousness to be conscious of such an idea. So, as we sit here, this entire moment is flooded with awareness. So that awareness is there before you understand it, before you focus it, before you try to do anything with it, before you try to enhance it. It's already there. And so in order to rest as awareness, the first step in resting as awareness is a simple acknowledgement that awareness or consciousness is already here and it's already fully present, fully functional. Right? Doesn't matter if you have thought in your mind, it doesn't matter what kind of feeling you have in your body at the moment, it doesn't matter what kind of notions you have in your head. It doesn't matter if you understand something or you're in confusion. The one thing that you can be certain of is that whatever's happening is happening within the field of awareness. Anything that's outside of your field of awareness, you have no idea what's happening. You notice that? Like, we don't actually know what's happening on the other side of the street, because it's not in your field of awareness at the moment. But if you go outside, then it will suddenly come into your field of awareness. So to rest as awareness. And awareness, if you really start to rest, you'll notice that awareness is not something that is separate from what's arising. Awareness, in other words, isn't a witness. Do you know, awareness isn't the watcher. Right? So a lot of people hear kind of awareness practices, and they're told to enhance the watcher, be the watcher, right? Some form of be the watcher. Like if you go to some I don't know, some sporting event and you're sitting up on the bleachers and you're watching what's happening. You're supposed to watch everything in your life as if you were sort of up in the bleachers and develop being the watcher. But that's actually just sort of an egoic construction. Awareness isn't a watcher. Can anybody find a watcher to awareness? There isn't a watcher. You have to make it up in your mind. Does anybody find a witness that is separate from what it's witnessing? Is awareness a witness? Because a witness always has a certain position, right? And a certain relationship. So awareness isn't really being the watcher, and it's not really being the witness. Both of those are things that egos do. And egos can get, you know, more or less skilled at being the witness or being the watcher or being more or less present. All that stuff are things that ego may or may not become good at if it really tries hard. But none of that is really what I'm talking about. Resting as awareness isn't a state of doing, it's a state of being. You can't really do resting as awareness. If your mind would say, okay, that sounds nice, what do I do? What do you do? Awareness is already present. How do you rest as awareness? Do you do something to rest as awareness? Is doing something even relevant? You see, resting in awareness is a state of being, not a state of doing. And so you also sort of surrender or relinquish the doer. That thing inside of you that's made up in your mind that's always trying to get something right, understand it, do it correctly, wants to know, how do I do this? How do I do that? How do I perfect this? That's the doer, right? And the doer is always asking questions, mostly questions like, how do I do that? Right? Well, the way you do resting as awareness is you relinquish the doer. You know, pat it on the head, you know, let it know that it's irrelevant. Don't whisper it, though. It doesn't like to hear that. And just rest. So in order to rest, it's a letting go. And probably more accurately, it's a state of letting be. Because awareness, consciousness, is letting be everything about right now. Your mind may or may not be in the position of letting everything be right now. Your mind may be trying to make certain things happen or make other things not happen anymore. So your mind may not be letting everything be. In fact, most people's minds does not let very much be for very long. So in order to just rest as awareness, there's relinquishing the sort of the neurotic need to understand, and it's also letting go of the neurotic need to do. There's a time for understanding, certainly, and there's a time for doing, certainly. But in terms of what I'm speaking of, those are the first two things that just need to be relinquished, right? Doing and the need to understand, the desire to understand. And then there can be a resting. Now, when most people begin to rest, relax, acknowledge that this thing we're calling awareness or consciousness is fully present and functional, It's for most people, it becomes difficult to rest for more than a few moments because their mind keeps trying to entice them. Like, you know, like a seductor or a seductress. Like, no. See, if you really just understood this one last thing, you see, then it would be, you would rest so much easier. You really would, I promise. Just think about this one thing. Have you noticed that? Just think about this one thing. Solve this one thought, and then it'll be so much easier to rest as awareness. Isn't that what thought is often doing? It says, well, you did a nice job of resting for 5 seconds, but that was nice, but you see, it could be so much better if you could just understand this or understand that or ask, what do I do with it? And how do I do it? And how do I incorporate it into my life? And how do I, you see what I mean? It's in one sense, it's obvious, but it's also very subtle. That movement of mind that's always trying to understand, trying to do. But you don't do awareness. That's why the first word I use is rest. Rest as awareness. Because see, resting as awareness immediately gets your involvement out of the egoic mind state. It's not like you have to work a long time to get yourself out of the egoic mind state. Any instant you're resting as awareness, you can't do that as long as you're involved in the egoic mind state. In should, in shouldn'ting, the neurotic desire to grasp everything conceptually, on and on and on and on, all the things that the egoic mind does. You can't actually rest as awareness for even a split instant and at the same time be in the egoic mind state. So as soon as you rest, automatically, you're not, in that moment, you're not dominated. You're not caught in the egoic mind state. Now, as I often tell people, you know, if you did this one simple thing with any consistency, that would be amazing. If you could do this one simple thing with any kind of consistency, any real consistency. By that, I don't mean necessarily you sustain it for a long, 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 long time. That's not what I mean by consistency. I mean just not being lured into the mind trying to figure everything out, spiritually speaking. Because the hardest thing to do is to stay with one simple thing with any kind of consistency. It's easy to stay with something very complex. You know, I could give a very complex, complicated, intricate, possibly interesting, maybe even entertaining spiritual teaching. And you could stay with that with such consistency. You could think about it for days or weeks, or you may even be able to think about it for months, and you'd be very, you might be, if you were captured by it, you could be very consistent about it, you know? But to give anybody something extraordinarily simple, here's the teaching. Here's the teaching and the method. Rest as awareness. It's a little more difficult to have any consistency with that. Because why? Because there's nothing for the egoic mind to do. And it gets a little nervous when there's not much for it to do. Does it not? It gets a little unsettled. But nonetheless, that's the core. That's the core teaching, and if you want to call it a technique, that's the core technique. That's it. Now, if resting as awareness actually happens, if it really starts to happen for you, then it's at some point it will dawn on you that you and awareness are not two different things. That you aren't actually somebody who's resting as awareness. That was actually kind of a notion, an idea of you. That actually awareness is much more what you are than all the ideas that you ever had about yourself in your life. So by doing this one simple thing, which is actually not a doing, it's a state of being, of course, you kind of let it happen rather than make it happen, you know? That's the funny thing about waking up, spiritually waking up. Waking up is actually much more like going to sleep than it is like waking up. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you suddenly open your eyes and you wake up and your mind starts to think. You know, it's if nothing other than it's going to be cold out there, or, you know, I can't wait to have the first cup of coffee or whatever. You know, the mind starts thinking in most people very, very quickly. But actually, spiritual awakening isn't so much like when you wake up in the morning. It's a lot more like when you go to sleep at night. It's much more like that. People often ask, well, how do I awaken? I say, well, you wake up in the same way that you go to sleep, which sounds totally upside down and strange, does it not? Because usually what we're taught is, here's what you have to do in order to wake up, right? And ego loves that stuff. Ego says, great, I've got something to do, you see? And if I do it, if I perfect it, if I do it really well, then I'm going to wake up to what I really am. Right? And ego loves that kind of stuff. And the more complicated, the better. Right? And of course, different egos like to do different things. Some like to do intellectual things. Some like to do, you know, spiritual practice things. Some like to do, like, devotional things. Egos are kind of hooked up different in terms of what they like to do. Right? Makes them very happy temporarily. But when it comes to being, egos can't do being, because being isn't an egoic activity. So just like when you go to sleep at night, in order to go to sleep, you have to relinquish the day. Do you not? You have to relinquish being awake. You have to relinquish. You don't know you're doing all this. Of course, it might screw up trying to go to sleep at night because you'll be a little more cognizant of what's happening. But just forget all this and it'll be fine. You're actually relinquishing your ego, your mind, your day. You're relinquishing your life. In a certain way, it's kind of a death because you're relinquishing consciousness. Right? And so you relinquish it. And when you relinquish it, then all of a sudden, you're asleep. So in the same way that you go to sleep, where you just relinquish, you don't do going to sleep. Right? Like insomniacs, they know lots of strategies to help them get to sleep. Right? Not that they work, it's just that... So if you tend to not sleep often, you know, you're trying to figure out how to go to sleep, right? Which is a great way to stay awake, isn't it? The more you try to go to sleep, generally, the more awake you stay, right? Because you're actually energizing the very awakeness, right? Where if you energize the mind, the thinking capacity, all of that, trying to get it right, you're actually activating the very thing that keeps you awake. So spiritually speaking, it's the same phenomena occurs, but sort of in mirror form or in opposite way. You know, the more you try to awaken, the more you stay in the dream state. Because it's the me in the dream of me that's doing all the struggling, right? It's just like if you're at, you're awake at night and you think, okay, I'm going to try really, really, really hard to go to sleep. And it, well, it doesn't work unless you just kind of exhaust yourself, you know. To go to sleep, you just relinquish everything. And then all of a sudden you're asleep. Primarily what you're relinquishing is a certain type of consciousness. When you go to sleep, you're no longer conscious. Most people. It is possible to be very conscious while you're asleep, but I won't go into that. You'll find that out for yourself sometime if you haven't already. But relatively speaking, you relinquish consciousness and you go to sleep. To spiritually awaken up, you don't. It's not so important that you relinquish consciousness because we don't. You don't necessarily. You know, you don't spiritually wake up because you go to bed or you don't go to sleep. I mean, if that worked that way, everybody would be spiritually awake, wouldn't they? You know. So it's not that you relinquish consciousness. You relinquish everything in consciousness. That makes sense? So something like be awareness, you just have to relinquish effort, struggle, striving, obsessive thinking, trying to get it right, trying to understand what that even means for someone to say, rest as awareness, and then the mind would go, what does that mean? It's kind of like someone says, go to sleep, and you said, yes, but how? You see, there isn't really an answer to how do I go to sleep, you know, except lie in a bed, but maybe if someone's still awake, and they go, how do you do this, you know? I've noticed in my life that the people that I know that go to sleep really well, one of them is my mother. My dad claims that she's asleep before her head hits the pillow. Just out like a light, just like that, you know, just out. And if you ask her, how do you do that? She doesn't have the foggiest notion of how she does it, you see? She has not the slightest idea of how she goes to sleep, which most great sleepers don't, you know? They just kind of spontaneously relinquish consciousness and boof, you know. But if you ask them, how do you do that? They go, I don't know. So spiritually, or in the spiritual pursuit, we could say, you're just relinquishing, you relinquish everything but consciousness, but awareness. So to rest as awareness just means to relinquish everything else but awareness. You don't have to understand anything. You don't have to control anything. You don't have to make your mind more quiet. You don't have to change the way you feel. You don't have to solve all your life issues. You just rest as awareness. You relinquish the obsessive need to do everything, anything other than to just relinquish it all and rest. And so in a very strange way, paradoxical way, we wake up spiritually in very much the same manner in which we go to sleep at night. The only difference is you're relinquishing the content rather than consciousness. When you go to sleep, you're relinquishing consciousness. When you in order to spiritually wake up, you just relinquish content, attachment to content. And that's all that can be done. You can't do anything more than that. And that's not doing much at all. In fact, it's not really doing anything. It's a non-doing. So I always thought, you know, what we usually want is someone to say, here's what to do. When it seems like to me, what we really need to be told is, here's what to let go of doing. It's not so much about what you do, it's about what you let go of doing or stop doing. Or just rest from doing. And when you, dare I say, do that, Language is funny, isn't it? Where do you begin to do that? Then this very, very, very simple shift of perspective can happen. It's much harder for it to happen when we're really involved in all of our doing. It's not that it's impossible. You know, awakening can happen anytime to anybody, right in the middle of the most horrendous, deluded state of mind, you know. So nothing is absolute. But generally, for most people, almost anybody I've ever talked to, when they've had this shift of consciousness, they're almost always surprised by it. Because it's like, well, I was doing this and I was doing that and I'd done this and I'd done that and I'd done that. And then I was just walking along the damn sidewalk and I wasn't doing any of that. And all of a sudden, boom, something happened. See? And I wasn't doing all the stuff that I did to make it happen. In fact, the definition was I most definitely wasn't doing all the things I did to make something happen. And that's actually a commonality. Not in every single case, only in probably 99%. Right? So if you're going with the odds, you know. So just a simple non-doing. Just rest. Just rest as awareness. And you'll see that it doesn't take struggle to do it. You don't have to get anything right to do it. All you have to do is stop trying to get it right. In fact, all you have to do is stop trying to know how to do it at all. You don't have to know how to do it. Awareness is it not? Consciousness is. You may not know what it is. Nobody knows what it is. They just know that it is. Awareness is. Consciousness is. That you can be relatively certain of, right? Or absolutely certain of. In fact, it's the only thing you can be certain of. So you don't have to do it, make it, or create it. That's the beautiful thing about it. It's sort of the opposite of, what was that philosopher? I think it was Descartes, didn't he say, I think, therefore I am? That's true in ego land, right? I mean, if you're going to think about something, think about that. In order for you to be the you that you think about, you know, the you that you always conceptualize and the image that you have of yourself, how you think about yourself, and all, you have to think. So from an ego's point of view, I think, therefore I am. It's absolutely true for an ego. Right? Of course, unfortunately for ego, ego is nothing but self-referencing thoughts. You see, like when you start to look at what do all these self-referencing thoughts refer to? Where is this thing, this me or this ego or this self that all these ideas about myself refer to? What do, and you realize at some point, and it's a shocker when you realize it, you know, to understand it, to be told it is one thing, but to really realize it is sort of a shock to your system when you realize that all the self-referencing thoughts that you have, that there actually isn't anything they refer to. They're just thoughts that refer to a self that's not actually there. And when you really see that, it's sort of a shock to your system, because you were so certain that you were there. You were so certain that all these self-referencing thoughts actually referred to something. But actually, the only thing your self-referencing thoughts referred to was more self-referencing thoughts. Therefore, I think, therefore I am. So from an ego's point of view, as long as you keep that train of thinking going where one self-referencing thought references another self-referencing thought, referencing another self-referencing thought. And as long as it goes and keeps going, then you as an ego, you are. Right? You exist, or you think you do. Right? But as soon as you're not thinking, it all just disappears like a bubble popping. That all these thoughts about oneself, actually, they don't refer to anything. What's even more shocking is all the thoughts you have about others don't refer to them either. Right? They refer to more thoughts about them. That there isn't actually a them at all, but... Like some thoughts actually refer to something. The thought never holds the reality of anything, but some thoughts actually refer to something, like the thought of a microphone or a cup. At least there's something they refer to. The thought of a self doesn't refer to anything except another thought. And just by resting as awareness, so much of this just comes clear all by itself. You see, because I can guarantee you, awareness isn't the thing that we think it is. Because if you notice, you've got a sort of a definition of what awareness is, right? An image of what awareness is and what it does. Awareness that's different from, say, for instance, these flowers. So your idea of awareness is something that's different than flowers. You're aware of the flowers. The flowers aren't your awareness. Or so you probably think. So actually, they do end up being the same thing. But you realize that only when you rest as awareness. Then it may dawn on you. So don't hold awareness too tightly in your definition. See, because nothing is as we define it, right? You aren't as you define yourself. The person next to you, if you know them, they're not as you define them. Nothing and nobody is as you define it. Nothing is as I define it. See, I'm in the same boat that you're in. If I was to define something, that doesn't tell you what it is, really. Right? So awareness is not what we define it as either. It starts as just this acknowledgement that awareness is. Consciousness is. But don't define it any more than that. Be it rather than define it, you see. Because then it spontaneously opens up. Just opens itself up. Like anything opens itself up if you experience it directly rather than think about experiencing it. Right? It opens the mystery of it up. Anything that you directly really experience, it reveals itself. And whenever you directly experience something that you've never experienced before, and it reveals itself through the experience itself, it's always much more rich than you ever imagined, is it not? Awareness or consciousness is the same way. When you really just start to experience it by being it, it opens itself up. It blooms, sort of like a flower blooms. So I thought that's maybe where we start for this afternoon, huh? With the simple stuff. With the simple stuff. Because everything comes from the simple stuff. Everything that I could say that's more complex, or I have said that's more complex, or more subtle, or more, however you may think about it, far-reaching, It all comes from this very, 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 very simple thing. See? So I think it's always good to have a certain grounding in something that's very simple, very available. Available meaning, if you've been coming to see me for years, or if you've just walked in the door today, guess what? You're at no disadvantage in this awareness thing. You got as much going on as anybody else has going on. You see, somebody who's practiced whatever they've practiced for 50 years, they don't have more awareness than you have. See, they're at no strategic advantage, necessarily. That may be good news to some and bad news to others. I think maybe that's why, like, Jesus would say something like, the last shall be first and stuff like that. I mean, it was a way of saying, look, nobody is closer or farther away from the kingdom. It just doesn't work. Nobody is closer or farther away from nirvana. You don't get there for good credit, you know, for trying hard, or you don't even necessarily get there from great behavior. And I'm not saying, therefore, go out and act like an idiot. I'm just saying that you don't earn your way into what already is, you know. So nobody's at any disadvantage to anybody else in terms of direct, immediate access to this awareness, this consciousness that I'm speaking of. Okay, let's see what's on your mind. Come on up, my friend. You have your ears all prepared on a note.
I've been scratching along as you
talk. Oh, good, okay.
Unity Palo Alto envelope. Okay, we got the.
Come close, good.
Watcher versus. No, the watcher, I'm sorry. The awareness. We have that.
Just no, 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 no.
Resting
no.
in awareness.
We don't have awareness.
Or it is.
Awareness is, yeah. Right,
it is. Mm-hmm. Then you started to talk about the watcher.
Yeah, awareness isn't. It's not the watcher.
Correct.
Or the witness.
The question is, and I'll try and answer it myself, and
good.
Help me.
Good for you. Always try to answer it yourself.
Well, I sit back there and I try and answer so I don't have to ask the question.
Great.
I go up here, you know, so.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get there, sometimes I don't. The separateness, okay, we're in awareness, we're resting in awareness.
Resting as awareness.
As awareness.
Okay. I don't mean to be, you know, conceptual police, but.
No, it's good.
But I only say that because when it comes to the practice of it, they're two extraordinarily different things.
Not in as.
Yes.
Okay.
To rest in, because then the ego goes, okay, I'll rest in.
It's a place.
To rest as, it's like, well, what do I do?
Okay.
Nothing.
As we're resting, as awareness.
In or as, okay.
As. there still seems to be that separateness which draws us into the watcher witness.
Yes.
I mean, we're even though you're right there in the moment, you're as awareness, you're, you know, there's still some separateness, it seems, or especially when you're starting.
Yes.
And you started to sort of touch on this where.
Because you're there, It's right in the language, right?
Right.
You're there.
You're there.
That's the separateness.
And you're aware. And that awareness is the infinite. But yet you still feel separate. Therefore, the watcher and the witness kind of kicks in.
Right. Right. That's what the mind makes out of it.
How do you bridge that gap? I mean, is it by just practicing this awareness, eventually it what did you say?
It happens by itself.
Spontaneously.
Let's put it this way. It's very important to know. It can only happen spontaneously.
Okay.
It can't happen any other way.
So by being as awareness.
Give it a try.
Yes, I mean, just practicing or being as awareness, not an act, but being as awareness.
Yeah.
Through that awareness, the watcher witness separateness will spontaneously break down?
It may. I'm not going to lie to you. There's no guarantees in anything in
eventually,
life. Huh?
Eventually?
Give it a try.
Well, I plan on. I am. I've been trying it. But, yeah. And
okay, just don't try quite so hard.
Well, you can't really try that. And the thing that just struck me when you spoke about as awareness, and then you started talking about the witness, the watcher.
Yeah.
Was that, okay, I've got the awareness, I can sit in a forest and be aware and nothing's going on and I'm, you know, part of the trees and everything, but still, I'm not like across the street. I'm not down the road. I'm still in that forest. I'm still, you know, within the proximity of this body.
Yeah.
And
do you think, you don't actually think that when you rest as awareness that you're somehow going to be somewhere else?
Well, there is infinite awareness, and that is what we are part of, correct?
We are infinite awareness.
Okay, we are infinite awareness, but right. As we are as awareness, we're not necessarily perceiving infinite awareness.
How do you know?
Because I can't see Pluto. I mean, you know, it's just like I can't see the other side of the universe.
Yes, but
from...
see, you have this idea that the universe or the world exists objectively. And infinite awareness would allow you to simultaneously exist in
everywhere.
All, right?
Right.
But the universe doesn't exist objectively. You see, there isn't an out there out there.
So you're saying the out there only exists in the ego?
What's that?
The out there only exists in the ego?
There you go.
Okay. So there may not be another galaxy or another, you know, across the street or whatever.
Well, if there is, it's not out there.
Okay. It's in here. It's okay. As awareness.
Yeah. And let me talk about this in a way that's maybe less difficult to comprehend. Okay. That's from a little bit different relative perspective, you might say. So there you are, being the all in the infinite, we'll just call it all in the infinite, all right? The all in the infinite. And as the all in the infinite, you, boom, you just manifest as, well, something like this, for instance, this moment, right? So here you are as this moment, okay? And then you exist as a particular body and mind. And then you perceive, let's say, through a particular body mind, right? Have you become any less infinite because you perceive through a particular form?
No.
Have you become anything other than what you actually are because you've perceived through a particular form?
No.
You see? Without the form, you're not going to perceive anything.
So you don't necessarily perceive the infinite as our minds perceive it, or
not as the infinite as our minds define it.
Define it. There you go.
Right. Not as our minds define it. Not like being everywhere that I imagine everywhere is.
Right.
All at once. Because that's the thing. That's the thing that one can't really understand it. Is there isn't an everywhere to be at all at once. But don't worry about that. That one will come by itself. And don't even believe it. It comes by itself.
So just what you're saying is that whole the mind's concept of infinite isn't necessary to become...
No.
It's not even needed.
No, I think it just really muddles the water, you know, because then it gets one often into sort of speculation. And certain questions that seem really... like really good rational and may even be really good questions, you know, like if I'm the all awareness, then why don't I know what's going on in the person over there?
Right.
You see what I mean? Well, you could. And some people do.
But not necessarily.
But that not necessarily, they don't necessarily, you can do that. And some people can do that. Some people can know exactly what you're thinking and can feel everything you're feeling.
Okay.
People can do that aren't actually spiritually awake. In fact, most of the people that I've met that can do it aren't necessarily awake. They can just do it. It's a capacity, right? It's a capacity. Some people have that talent, you could say, that capacity. They can do it. But if you can, I can guarantee you, when you can do it, you'll quickly realize that you don't really want to do it. It wasn't near as alluring as you thought it was. Could you imagine if you could hear everybody's thoughts in this room?
Yeah, like static.
Believe me, I've met people who can. And they go absolutely, it just drives them absolutely crazy. It drives them nutty. If they haven't learned how to turn it off, right. on and off, right. right? Or focus it. You know, but if you can just do that, and I've met people, like, everywhere they go, they just hear, like, everybody's internal dialogue as if everybody was talking what they're thinking. And it just, can you imagine?
It's hard enough with one brain.
Wouldn't you think if you were the infinite that you'd set it up in such a way that you didn't have to hear all that nonsense if you didn't want to? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
There would be no point to it, really.
So
doesn't it make much more sense that you could function right here, right now, and that would probably be as much as you would need to take care of?
Well, and that seems to be possible within my experience.
Yeah.
You know, I've had glimpses of that, you know, where it's like, okay, I'm just here, and almost like you feel like you... It's almost like out of body, kind of, where you feel like you're okay, you're here, but all of a sudden you just kind of go bigger, mm-hmm. a bigger circle of your awareness from where mm-hmm. you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying, just to try and put it into words, that you don't need, it's not necessary to keep on going.
No, 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 it's not necessary to. The ego can expand really, really big. The ego can expand to include the whole universe and beyond. It can expand all the way across time and space.
An ego can.
Sure. You didn't think I'd say the ego. But
well, okay, now we're switching gears here. Now.
Right. Look, the infinite doesn't expand.
It's infinite.
It's infinite. It right. already is what it is. It doesn't expand. So what's expanding?
Okay.
Right? What's expanding into the infinite? Not that expanding isn't nice. Expanding is a wonderful experience. It's an amazing experience to have your expand and get immense and all across space and time and all of that. It's a glorious spiritual experience. Well,
that makes it clear what you just said, that the ego is the thing that's wanting that expansion, that
right.
wanting to go like big and, you know,
of
off the middle, you know, wherever.
Yeah.
Where
the ego is what he wants to be everything.
Awareness could be a dot, you know, a tiny minuscule little thing, but it's still awareness. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
In other words, awareness manifesting as a grain of sand is not any more or less infinite.
Okay.
It doesn't lose its substance, right? Because the ocean takes the form of a wave, it doesn't become any less water because it's a wave, does it? It doesn't lose any of its substance. So if you dip this cup into the Pacific Ocean, and you get the water, this is as much water as the, not in volume, but as in substance, as the whole ocean. It's water. The ocean contains more of this, but not anything that's essentially different from this. You see what I mean? So because it's in this cup and there's not a lot of it, it hasn't become anything less than what it is. So the infinite never becomes more or less of what it is. You never become more or less of what you are, ever.
And you don't need to perceive the ocean to be able to be that drop of water that is awareness, correct?
You don't need to what?
You don't need to become the ocean in order to be that drop of water.
Well, you are the whole.
Because then that's where we...
Yeah, but see, the whole isn't an expansion thing. Okay. There is an expansion thing. I know expansion. It's a great thing. It's like consciousness can go expand really big and get really nice. In fact, it happens to people in small measure, not in a big enough measure that it shocks them, but in small measure, it happens to people with some frequency. You know, you go out to the Grand Canyon and you look and you kind of, your breath changes. It kind of goes... Right? You breathe in. And if you're really aware, your consciousness is actually expanding a bit. It's not usually going huge like it can, but people's consciousness is always, consciousness is this very moldable thing, right? It can expand a bit and contract a bit and happens all the time, right? When you get very intense, you know, your consciousness is actually getting very It's kind of getting small, you could say. So, but what I'm speaking about is something more fundamental. It's not necessarily, it doesn't require expansion.
Okay.
It's, oh, everything is, what word do you want to give it? Everything is that. Everything is, I'm looking for a word that's not spiritual, you know? Everything is life. Yeah, that's good. Everything is life. Boom, everything. And you are life, essentially. You are life, not, you're not life opposed to a human being, right? You're life appearing, and simultaneously, you're also life appearing as a particular human being. So you don't lose the particular humanness. You see what I mean? Because if you lost your particular humanness, you would be totally dysfunctional, right? And you can get into those sort of states for a while where you totally lose your sense of particular here and now-ness, and your body is completely non-functional. Might be a pretty groovy spiritual place to visit every now and then, but it doesn't do very good as far as survival goes, right? And you can't drive to work very well, and, you know.
Well, it definitely made sense. It
doesn't work very well.
When you were talking earlier about the as awareness, but then your ego has to get kick in and do its deal and live the life and, you know, function each day.
Maybe, maybe not. Does it?
Well, it would seem that to survive as a human in, you know, material world, that the ego has to survive, feed itself, you know, do whatever it needs to do to keep the body going.
It depends how we define ego.
Okay.
If we define ego as ultimately, not the way most humans
survival
walk
instinct.
Around, as ultimately the most rudimentary possible sense of self, that's where the ego starts. That's where it builds itself upon, right?
Okay.
It's because you have biologically in your whole system, there's a biological, a certain rudimentary sense of self. When I mean rudimentary, I mean extraordinarily rudimentary.
Right, instinct.
Your dog has a rudimentary sense of self, just enough to know when he's hungry that he puts the food in his mouth and not somebody else's. Right? If you didn't have any rudimentary sense of self, you wouldn't know where to put your food. You wouldn't know. There was a lot. You would be totally dysfunctional. So that would be ridiculous. So you have a certain very rudimentary sense of self, right? That any biological organism have. It's not a higher brain function thing. An ant has it. You see what I mean? Everything has it. A bumblebee has it. A tree has it, for God's sake, right? Trees will start try to steal sunlight from each other. You see, right? They'll bend over, and right? Their biological survival thing, right? Now, we have that also. But we also have this incredibly powerful cerebral cortex, don't we? Very powerful. And so that cerebral cortex, which can cognize and think and do all sorts of very, very complex and amazing and even beautiful things, is it has this sense of self in it. And from that sense of self, once the mind gets going and the cerebral cortex gets functioning, then it creates where there's a sense of self, it creates this virtual self that only exists in its thinking process. See, so we're not talking about eradicating all sense of self. That's a certain amount of that is necessary. But seeing that this thing that our cerebral cortex manufactures in thought, and that's what we often call ego, that actually that's something that has no real existence. In other words, all those thoughts don't refer to anything other than more thoughts. All of our self-referencing thoughts. Right? And when that's totally seen, again, that's not something you need to get rid of any more than you need to cut your cerebral cortex out. You know, that wouldn't work out very well. But when it's really thoroughly, thoroughly seen that all that your mind has created about you and the world and others, it's a fiction. Right? That's why I say it's not like being the one as opposed to being a particular human being. It's being the one while simultaneously manifesting and appearing as a particular human being. It's a package deal. One doesn't need to be relinquished because the particular human being is the one, you see? Just like the water.
Right.
Put it in a cup, it's no different than the water in the ocean.
Well, it's like how you mentioned once before how if you were infinite, why wouldn't you have infinite experiences? Why wouldn't you be infinite? And, you know, all these... Do you remember that? No. Yes, maybe.
I remember you wondering that, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, okay. Right. It just wouldn't work out very well.
Right.
It'd be too overwhelming, too all-consuming. Right? I mean, it's just a biological necessity of manifestation. I mean, if you could hear everybody, every mind, every 7 billion minds in all the world right now talking to themselves, it would completely immobilize you, right? You'd probably want to throw yourself off a cliff just to get rid of it.
Then here's the question. Is there anything that hears all that all the time? Does anything exist that would be like, you know, a body of the infinite that has all this stuff? You know, because you kind of sometimes... envision yourself as like you're the universe, right? And if you were the universe, and it's like you know
you're never
everything that's going on in the
out.
Universe all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm not trying to figure it out.
But this yes, is you it. Are. Well, which is okay. I'm just saying, I mean, you won't actually.
I'm trying to relate
it.
To because it goes from being, you know, a dualistic type of thought
yes.
to a non-dualistic type yeah. of thought. And in order to get to a non-dualistic type of thought, you got to get rid of all the dualistic stuff.
You just got to see through them, yeah.
Yeah, or just, you know, let it go, let it fall away, however you want to, you know, think of it. Yeah. And one way I did that when I was young, you know, you go from, you know, Christianity dualistic kind of thing to non-dualistic, like Eastern thought. Mm-hmm. And the way I was able to do that was to be able to say, okay, if I was the universe, okay, how does the universe know everything that's going on all at the same time? How does it function? And the only way I could relate to it at that point was, okay, if I have my body, if my body was the universe, I know what's going on my little toe without thinking about it.
That's it.
I know what's going on. You know, I just know.
Right.
So that to me was like I'm like a model of the universe.
Or it works without you knowing it.
Right.
It's like your heart beats and you breathe and all of your cells have to do all these amazing things and your synapses have to fire in this amazing pattern for it all to work. And you don't have to know how.
It just happens.
Right.
And you don't know it. You just.
No.
You almost know it simultaneously. You can feel it all going on all at the same time. Yeah. So is there an infinite universe that is like that or not?
That's what life is doing all the time.
Okay.
That's what it's doing.
But there's no, like, you know, infinite consciousness that just sort of runs the whole show.
No, no, you got to get rid of that sort okay. of like okay. mommy, daddy, God thing.
Right.
It's not like that. Like right. I'm up here on high in the cosmic all and I'm, you know, watching it all happen and it's all doing very well or not.
Well, even if you want to say
it doesn't work that way.
God is the universe.
Yeah.
The universe is his body. He knows or it knows or whatever knows everything that goes on all the time because it's part of it.
You might imagine that.
But that's still, nah, okay.
No.
Okay. Mm-mm. It's back to as awareness. Right? The simple, okay.
Start with the simple stuff. And by the way, don't believe anything I'm saying. It's none of it's necessary. It's really not necessary. We each, you can find out all for yourself, but just start with something very simple. You see? It's something very, very, very simple.
Well, out of that, all this will become apparent?
It may.
Okay.
It may. Right? I wouldn't give anybody an absolute guarantee. There isn't any guarantees in life.
Okay.
Except that you are life. That's the only guarantee there is. But outside of that, it may. Okay?
Great. Thank you.
All right. Take it out of time. Completely remove the element of time. Time is the idea that keeps us in this sort of dream. It's like, the question makes great sense. If I do this, will this happen at some other point in time? But time is the means by which we keep putting ourselves asleep, more and more and more asleep. When you take time away, which is the most important thing to do, take time away, because when you take time away, then all you have is right here, right now, this instant. And all of you is focused right here, right now. And all of you is paying attention right here, right now. You're 100% available right here, right now. What am I really? Really, what am I? Not tomorrow, not the next day, not will this work if I do it, but what am I right here, right now? Take it completely out of time, right? Because time tends to, the idea of time tends to perpetuate itself, right? One tomorrow becomes another tomorrow, becomes another tomorrow, becomes another tomorrow, becomes another tomorrow, right? It's a lot easier for the dream state to sort of break down when you've run out of time, you know? Everybody knows things happen when they run out of time, doesn't it? Everything becomes possible when we run out of time. Right? Hello.
Hi. I apologize if this is Adyashanti 101, but...
I hope it is.
Well, for my question. But why is awareness something that I should strive at? Why should I place a value on doing as opposed to being...
Oh, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. Okay. You shouldn't. What is it that you want?
Well,
in other words, what propels you along, like to even come here or to do anything that we might call spiritual or whatever? What is it about for you, in other words?
I don't know.
Ah, okay. Because you might really look into that,
mm-hmm.
right? Let that arise for you, because that's something that a lot of people don't really know. It's common, but it's also very, very important. Because I couldn't say, okay... This is only relevant if one is interested in, I don't know what you'd call it, whatever you want. Waking up, reality, you know, use whatever you, then it's relevant. But if you want something different, then let's say it's not relevant. Then you shouldn't be doing it.
But isn't wanting an action of the ego?
Yes.
And so then you're saying that it's okay to want to be, or...
It's not okay, or it's either okay or not okay. You either want or you don't want.
So it has to do with, but the ego still is making decisions.
It thinks it is.
It thinks it.
It imagines it is. Yeah.
Okay.
You see? So, but, okay.
I'll just go take it.
All right. You see, because I'm not, come on up. I'm not selling this to anybody. In fact, if you actually have a choice... This might not be something you want to have much to do with.
Thank you.
Losing your world may sound romantic, but when it happens, it may not end up to be so romantic. Good
kind
afternoon.
Kind of a two-part question or observation about... I've recently been exposed to two books that really had a great impact on the way I think.
Uh-huh.
One was My Stroke of Insight by Jill Bolte Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
And just, are you familiar with that book? And what she went through when she had her neurotrauma and kind of was in the space of, I guess, finding awareness from outside of what we normally use to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. But the second part was, the other one was The Astonishing Power of Emotions by Jerry and Esther Hicks.
Mm-hmm.
And then using, and then, are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay. In that, they kind of talk about going with the flow, mm-hmm. and either moving upstream or downstream. And so what I was kind of thinking when you were talking about that from an awareness perspective is the flow being awareness.
Yes.
And you're either moving with it, not necessarily trying to attain it,
right.
but moving with it or... against it.
You're right. You're either in cooperation or not in cooperation.
Right. And, but one of the things that they talked about in aligning yourself more closely with what you're trying to achieve is using your emotions as a guidepost.
I see.
Kind of the gut or instinct that you, mm-hmm. you have, which kind of tells you whether you're moving in a positive or negative direction.
I see. Yeah.
And so that whole state of awareness being, the flow that you're in. And the gentleman that was talking earlier about that someone out there or something out there is like seeing and hearing everything and thinking everything. I've thought that. I've been there a lot. that type of awareness where we are all part of that. We are all, in essence, making it up as we go along. I hoped you'd heard about The Astonishing Power of Emotions, because I was going to see what your take was on using emotions as a guidepost to lead your life or move into a state of awareness like that you were talking about.
Well, to this extent, I don't know if this will you know, ring a bell or along what they were talking about. I don't really know. But as far as I'm concerned, we're literally biologically wired, hooked up to tend more towards what's real and what's in flow. In other words, when you're in there, you get this feeling in your body, right? It feels good, feels harmonious, flow feels a particular way. When we're moving conceptually, moving in a way against reality, against life, it doesn't feel right, does it? It doesn't feel good. You get anxious, you get depressed, you get angry, you get in some way. So we have, this is sort of an amazing feedback system. You don't even need to try to figure it out in your head. Your body is literally put together, hooked up, so to tell us when we're in more in the flow of existence or out of the flow of existence. You'll immediately get negative response when you're out of the flow of existence, the way you feel, and you'll immediately get positive a sense in your system when you're more in the flow.
As in resting as awareness.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you can use that. You can use your gut. Your
absolutely. Your absolutely. Absolutely. You, in fact, that's one of the things that you develop when we start to realize I'm not going to figure all this out. The mind, of course, has its place, but we're not going to figure all this out. Only then, and we really realize that, only then does this sort of deep intuition start to really awaken within us, this other sort of wisdom. Because there is, awareness just isn't the sort of light of awareness that's just looking at everything. That's just our idea about it. It has immense intelligence, immense wisdom. And that's when that intuitive sort of, you start to live more by intuitive insight than sequential thinking, right? So sure, that's what comes more and more. Good to talk with you. Yes, my friend, come on. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
I was hoping you could speak a little bit more about the difference between attention and awareness.
Ah, okay.
Because for me, what it seems like is sometimes when you say rest and awareness, it just happens.
Yeah.
It just
right.
flips.
Right.
So to speak. But then, for the most part, I've noticed that wherever my attention is, that's my experience.
Yeah.
So if my attention is on awareness, then it seems that I'm identified with the attention looking into this vast space.
I see, yes. Right.
And somewhere there, something breaks down. I don't even have words, but it's like it's a gap that mm-hmm. I don't understand.
A gap gets created.
Yeah, something like that. And right. I was hoping you could speak maybe more about the difference between those two.
Well, attention requires a certain focus, right? So, wow, this room is so well insulated that you can't hear. I was going to say you could listen to the traffic. You can't hear the traffic. You can see it. It's strange to be this insulated, isn't it? But awareness is like the awareness that I'm talking about. That's to distinguish it between attention. They're not two different things, by the way. But say you're laying, imagine you're laying at the beach, right? And or laying somewhere, but we'll say the beach. And you're just laying there on your blanket and your eyes are closed. And you hear the waves crash, you know, kind of coming in. And you hear a few seagulls going by, a little wind, you know, brushing across your ears. You hear children playing over here, right? You might hear somebody playing some, who knows, you know, volleyball or something over here. And you're just laying there and you're not focused anywhere. And you're taking in, you ever notice when you're really relaxed, you're taking in all this sort of panoramically. All these sounds are taken in all at the same time when you're in that very sort of relaxed state, right? Now that's awareness at rest. Now then imagine that your mind goes, wow, what was that? I thought I heard a seagull. And so you start to really listen to seagulls. And then you have attention is focusing somewhere. And as soon as you focus, you tend to not hear much of the rest, right? You're not aware of it. It's there, but you're really focusing on something else, right? So when I say to rest as awareness, really what you're doing is you're also letting go of focusing attention.
Okay. Yeah, that sort of gets it.
Because in awareness, just be open and vast. And in order to do that, you can't even be looking for awareness, right?
Right. I think you said something that kind of struck me is that, you know, even when I am focused on something, awareness is there. I mean, of course it's there because I was aware of it, whether I was listening to the seagull or to the ocean.
Right.
And so, but there's a different quality, you know. You know, so at some point in your talk, you know, it just happened, right? And I just opened up, and there's a different quality, and there's a relaxation there.
Yes.
And it's so, yes. That's sort of what it's sort of opening up to awareness as opposed to...
Right, and as opposed to doing too much of it.
Okay.
You see? And that opening, it's always something that's just spontaneous. It's spontaneous, but that doesn't mean you can also sort of... As a, dare I say, you know, practice. Nothing you practice is the real thing, right?
Right.
So a practice called, now what I'm going to do is rest as awareness, that's not necessarily ever going to be, it's not going to be the destination that's just a pointer, right? It's just a pointer. That's all it is. It's kind of like, go in that direction, but it's actually kind of saying stop going in any direction. But even to say that, it's a type of a pointer, right? And in that, then you're more vulnerable. Then this sort of shift can happen, which can only be spontaneous, you know? There you are resting as awareness, and you think you're doing a really good job of it. You're like, wow, I'm really getting the hang of resting as awareness. And all of a sudden, something shifts. You're like, well, this is the same thing. There's this still resting as awareness, but this is totally different. It has a totally different sense about it, right? The fixation on oneself has completely, at that moment, disappeared. And it has a totally different quality.
Something else that you just said that actually occurred to me earlier today is those pointers. They seem to come like... spontaneously too. You'd be driving along, mm-hmm. when I was driving here, thinking about something, and then all of a sudden, you know, some question or something introduced itself and it opened up.
Yeah.
And I like to take credit for the fact that I came up with that pointer, but really, you know, it just came.
It just arose.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's sort of, it seems to be more on just trusting that
good.
It'll come.
Yes. That it does come. Everything comes. Everything is provided for.
Hmm.
Right. And the more you realize that, there's a certain trust that's there. And that sort of focused, neurotic ego trying to do it all right starts to relax because you have a trust that there's something else going on here. See, there's something other than me trying to get it all right. There's something that just sort of arises as if out of nowhere. And there's this trust that starts to happen that actually starts to relax that hold, doesn't it?
Right.
Right? You start to trust in life more than you do trusting in your idea of what you're trying to accomplish.
It's funny because right now I'm out of work, mm-hmm. and somehow I don't care in a sense. Like I just have this feeling that when it's going to happen, it'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
And all the people around me are kind of pushing me, you know, you need to go this way, you need to go that way. And it's... sort of, I'm learning to sort of balance that,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, there's a long time I believed that, and it's very easy for me to hook right back in,
right.
Especially when other people are panicked for me, in a sense.
Yeah. Well, if everyone's panicking for you, then, you know, thank them. You don't have to do it.
There is a sweetness in that.
Of course, there's a sweet concern. Yeah. They're concerned about you and your life.
Sure.
But as my, you know, friend who was just up here talked about too, when you realize that, you know, to get in that sort of, you know, panic mode, that's actually very familiar, right?
Mm-hmm.
To to ego land, it's right. Like in some situations, if you don't go into sort of a semi-panic, everybody wonders, what's wrong with you? Yeah. Can't you see you're out of work? This happened, that happened, your life might fall apart. Come on, you have to be panicked, you see. Why? Well, because it'll make something good happen. You know, see, it's right. That's what sometimes you get around right, you. It's like unfathomable that you wouldn't be overly disturbed, right? But something starts to move in you. See, it's what we were talking about before. It's this. It's not that you just necessarily go, okay, well, I'm just going to sit on my couch and something will happen. But it's more that you start to surf the currents of life.
Right. You trust wherever life is leading
you. That's right. You have to have the impetus to say yes and to go along with it. You can't be that, you know, so checked out that you're not even aware of that. But but to go with those currents is you start to realize that's real life. Hmm. Right? Life takes care of itself very well.
Can I ask one last question? Mm-hmm. There is this one persistent belief that, you know, when we're talking about the attention being focused on something,
yeah,
that you need to do something to unhook it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Is it true?
I don't know.
Well, look at it. When you believe that you need to unhook it, does it work? Does that get it unhooked?
No.
What happens when you believe that you need to unhook your attention from something? When you really believe that, yeah, thought comes, God, I got to stop thinking about that, or I got to get my attention out. What happens?
You become hooked on that. Ah, I have to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, right.
The amazing thing is it's so obvious when you look at it, right? It's so like... It's not like brain surgery. It's really, really obvious.
Right.
But we often just don't look at the obvious.
But it's that thing that hooks onto it.
Yeah.
That, I think, was what I was trying to first talk about. It's that thing that hooks onto it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is, and I don't even know how to look at that thing.
It's a thought. So you ask, what's the thought that gets me hooked on whatever you're hooked on?
But there isn't like an entity that I'm associated with that
No, it has no entity. There's no entity. There's just thought. Thought believed, right? There's nobody behind there. There's nobody having the thoughts. There's no entity behind all the thinking. Right? There's just thoughts. But a thought that's believed has great power, doesn't it?
Right.
Then a thought not believed, it's just a thought. It's just another thing that flows through consciousness. But a thought believed, grabbed onto, now that thought has power. But the thought didn't have any power in and of itself. It gets all of its power from belief. You have to believe. There has to be belief involved.
And so belief is a thought on top of a thought?
Yes.
So to speak?
Yes. Hmm. That thought's relevant. That thought's true. Must pay attention to that thought. And then you're hooked. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, why can't you just be having so many thoughts just go through your mind and they just come and go? But then you have a thought that sticks, right? He shouldn't have said that. Why did it stick? Because you believed he shouldn't have said that. You see? Right. That's why it stuck.
I mean, maybe it's a function of language, but even as you're saying, you say you're hooked.
It's just language. Right. I know it's just language. There isn't an entity there. I'm very aware of that, but
yeah,
we're stuck with language. And the only thing I hate more than ordinary language, which I don't really hate at all, is non-dual language. It's just a personal thing. I find it nauseating.
Right.
You know, like when you have to always couch yourself in the non-dual terms. Well, the apparent person has the apparent voice and apparently has enough control to hook into that, and it's all appearance. You know, it's like, please, let's just talk, but as we talk, also underline, no.
Sure.
Right? It's not about, it's not an entity that's actually doing all this. Right?
Hmm.
It's just the power of thought, the power of confusion, the power of clarity.
Like a force.
Yeah, like a force.
In the system.
A force or an energy, call it what you will.
Hmm.
Right. We personalize them. And add the notion I, but it's just actually a force, just an energy.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good to see you. Yes, come on up. Hi, welcome.
There was a couple of questions I had for you. One thing that I wanted to know if you had any feedback on is when I used to have a teacher one-on-one, and when I would be teaching with him, I would get a headache.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I do the same thing with you.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no. It's paradoxically, I think something's opening up, or I don't know. I guess that's why I'm asking you.
Where is the headache, by the way?
It's right here.
Right on the side, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be happening on both sides at once, mm-hmm. but it's usually right here.
Mm-hmm.
That was
one. It's probably some sort of energy gets activated.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it only has happened with you and with my guru that I had worked with before he crossed over.
Uh-huh.
And so you both have kind of that.
We both give you headaches?
Yeah, you both give me headaches. And I keep coming back. I can't stay away, isn't it?
Okay. It'd be a great title for a book, wouldn't it? My guru gave me headaches.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be.
Right. And it may or may not, you know, who knows exactly. It may be your guru. It may be me. It also may be us.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just
yeah.
The group. And there's a certain energy in the group.
Yes.
And then since, you know, it's all connected, your body has a certain, it has a certain way of registering that energy.
Right.
And if the energy gets kind of strong or powerful, it can create all sorts of, especially if there's any blocks, and most people have plenty of blocks.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
A lot of them hang out around here too for me right now.
Yeah.
The other thing, oh boy, see my mind. Man, if I just give it a second, it's gone.
It's gone?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I know. I know. But I had a question that I really wanted to ask you.
Oh, okay.
Now it's gone.
Here, let me have a sip. I won't look at you.
Okay, yeah. Okay, there was it. What was the question that I wanted to ask? I forgot. Oh, I tried.
This is like forgetting your mantra or something, huh?
Yeah. You know, all those things that I used to find important,
yeah,
are very not mm-hmm. anymore for me at all. And the only thing when you were talking, I'm glad that you brought that up about, you know, trying to seek or trying to, mm-hmm. And I do understand the difference between in and as. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, I don't completely understand it, because if I did, I wouldn't be here. I don't think, you know. Okay, this is getting embarrassing.
It's so. Okay. If you get your question back, then raise your hand again.
Okay, thanks.
All
I
right?
will.
Yeah, maybe it'll come back. We'll see. Come on up. Hi.
Hello. First of all, I wanted to give thanks, actually, for you coming out with your teaching and sharing it with this group and the world. I just want to give thanks for that.
You could, well, thank you. How
keep
nice.
Your light under a basket, but you're sharing it, and I want to give thanks for that. I also want to give thanks to the Open Gate Sangha and what they do on your website. I was able to watch and listen to so much because they're
good.
Putting those clips up there.
They're lovely. They work really hard, harder than I do.
So my question, you said something, one of the things that I love about your teaching so much is it's just you have a beautiful way of expressing ideas that have just helped things to make more sense for me, like your water ocean analogy was lovely. And you said something just a minute ago, you said we need to let go of this God, mother, father thing. And that's a question I have. You know, of all the teachings in Buddhism, the one I just cannot get my head around at all is karma.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't understand this big computer someplace keeping track of all these actions.
Well, then throw it out, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Another, what I mean, I'm just kind of being flippant, but what I really mean to say is you don't have to, nobody, not only do you not have to, you shouldn't. Intelligence shouldn't even allow you to accept anything that you haven't proved to be true and you're for yourself. Mm-hmm. Why would we accept any other? See, if we accept anything other than what we actually absolutely know,
yes,
then we're just stuck in belief. And belief means I'm actually taking something to be true that I actually don't really know.
Right.
But I believe it to be true.
Right.
If you know it to be true, then you don't believe. You don't have to believe.
Right.
Right? So belief is a surrogate. It's a stand-in for true knowledge. Right?
Yes.
So when someone says, I believe this, I immediately know that's what you actually don't know. But you really want that to be true. And it may be true and it may not be true, but your belief is a barrier to finding out.
Right.
So, you know, something like karma, it's not even necessary to see it one way or another, you see? Because, I mean, ultimately, it's the answer to whether there's karma is yes, no. I mean, it's easy. I mean, for instance, if I picked up this cup and threw it at your head, and it hit your head, would it hurt, probably?
Yes.
Yeah, so we'd say, okay, there was a cause here, this cup, and Adya threw it at my head, and it hurt. There was an effect. Relatively speaking, it seems as though we see cause and effect all around us, right? By the way, if you're going to understand karma at all, understand it as cause and effect. Not like you do bad things, therefore you get punished. That's a ridiculous notion of karma. That's like mommy, daddy, God nonsense all over again, right? Yes. That somebody punishes you because you did something rotten. It's more like, no, if you get drunk and you run into somebody and you kill them, you might spend time in jail.
Yes.
You didn't spend time in, you know, the universe didn't view you as like, this is going to be punishment for you. Human beings might be punishing you. Do you see? So it's not really a thing that has to do with morality so much to do as you drop a brick on your foot and it tends to hurt.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't hurt because you're being punished for dropping it. It hurts because brick hitting toe at velocity hurts. There's no other reason that it hurts than that, right? When you go beyond the relative, then you go outside of cause and effect, where you realize cause and effect is just a pipe dream. Relatively speaking, it has a place. But ultimately, forget it. But don't believe that. Ultimately, everything is spontaneously arising.
Yes.
Right? It's just spontaneously arising. And you can't make direct causal chain linked events to what's arising. Mm. Right? Ultimately. But if you try to apply that in the relative world, you'll keep running into walls. Right? Right?
Yes.
Right? Driving my car into that tree shouldn't have hurt if there is no cause and effect, you know, but it does. Get it?
Yes.
Okay. Was there something else or was that?
That's it.
That's it, huh?
Thank you.
All right. You got it back. Good for you. All right.
Okay, great. That's it. I got it. I wrote it.
And you wrote it.
Yeah. Okay. Medicine. I take medicine for pain.
Uh-huh.
And it makes me drowsy.
Uh-huh.
and it really interferes. So it's very paradoxical for me because on the one hand, on a physical level, it really helps.
Yeah.
On the level of being able to be aware.
On a mental level.
It makes messing
you fuzzy.
With me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really in a conundrum about that.
Well, let's look at it for a moment, okay?
Okay.
So there's the physical pain that you like some relief from.
Right.
Right? So you're taking a medication.
Right.
Right? And then it kind of makes your mind a bit fuzzy.
Just sleepy. Makes me sleepy.
Now, are you not completely and totally aware of sleepiness? You just said sleep makes me sleepy.
Yes. Yes.
You're pretty aware of that.
Yes.
Totally clear on that.
Yes.
Right? So it hasn't clouded awareness. It clouds mind.
Right. Oh, you just made me feel so much better.
Well, that wasn't my intent, but I'm glad it had that effect.
Of course, because that can't be clouded.
Right. Right.
That's an impossibility.
Right.
How did I miss that?
It's the thing that's noticing your mind is clouded.
Yeah.
The drug can make your mind clouded.
Right.
But it can't make the noticing that your mind is clouded, clouded.
Right.
Yeah?
That's great.
Pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know why I was stuck there. I mean...
You're just stuck there the same reason everybody else is stuck there. Because you thought about it a little too much.
Exactly. It was really heavy on my mind. So heavy that I forgot. But
yeah. And what I mean by you were thinking a little too much, that's not a criticism. It's a way of saying, hey, you had everything at your disposal, as everybody does,
right,
to look at this. All I did was ask you questions.
Yeah.
See, I didn't give you the answers. You gave me the answers. I just asked...
The question.
Is the awareness of cloudedness, is that clouded? I just asked the questions, and then you realized that you had the answer all along.
Yeah.
That's what I want to point out.
Yeah.
Often, though, we stop looking in our direct experience for answers. We look in our minds.
Of course.
And then our minds kind of have a tendency to get a little...
And
clouded.
And that was the whole thing for me with religion and everything, was that when I started looking at my experiences,
yes,
then all of that fell away. All of my questioning different religions, trying to figure, you know, different ones out.
Right.
I think every road leads us home. Some are just more expeditious than others. And I have this yearning to remember.
Ah, and what is it you want to remember?
Just my essence. I don't need to do anything.
What have you always wanted to remember?
Who I am, essentially.
Oh, okay.
What I am.
Yeah.
Beyond this.
Okay.
I know. I believe that existence, that's what I refer to God as, because to me, God or existence is everything. It holds everything that is. There is nothing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So see, now I forgot it again. That's what happened. My mind is like that lately. It goes.
Yeah.
And I think I think I'm losing it, or I think I have Alzheimer's, seriously. And that is, you know.
Well, just if you're going to remember something, remember that you aren't your mind.
Yeah.
You're not limited to your mind.
Yeah.
Your mind is just, it's just another organ. You know, your heart beats, your lungs breathe, and your mind thinks.
Right.
But you don't, you know.
The mind is just a tool.
Or it doesn't think, or it gets confused, or it loses its place, or whatever it does.
It does a lot of that lately.
Right?
Yeah, when I went to your last retreat, it really helped to hear you say that, because I was honestly getting a little worried because the mind was getting clouded so much and being forgetful.
Yeah.
So
just always see, when you allow your mind, if it's clouded and you allow it to be clouded,
right,
then you can ask, is there something that's not clouded?
Mm.
Right? usually we're struggling so much with what is in our experience that we can't actually ask the next most intelligent question, you know? Right. Well, my mind's clouded. Okay, it's clouded. What are you going to do about it? Yeah. Is there something that's not clouded? Right in the midst of all this cloudy mind. You see, yeah. And then you start to realize there is a wonderful clarity that doesn't depend on your brain being clear. You know, it's nice to have a clear brain, but it doesn't depend on it.
One more quick question.
Quick?
Yes. There's something's changing about when I ask a question now. It's like it's starting to come from here, the question.
Good. Yeah. More from your body, your being, than your mind.
More.
Wonderful.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. The deepest questions do come from your being.
Okay.
These are up here. These are curiosities and interests. Down here, this is just something. That's when I ask people, like, "What are you here for? What do you want?" They tend to look in their mind, but I'm not really asking their mind. I want that thing that's down, that's here. Right. That's what I want, you know? I want that thing that when it's all said and done, when your life is over, that thing that you really wished you'd put attention on. Yeah. That thing that you really, that question that you really wished you'd actually looked more deeply into that. And that's not just some idle curiosity here. That's something that's existential. Right? It has to do, it comes from our existence rather than just our thinking process. And that's the question that has great power because it comes from existence. Yes. Doesn't just come from curiosity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Okay. Well, there was a lot of hands up. I'd like to just sit here and speak all day long. That would be nice. To talk to you, but that's the end of our time together. But I would suggest just keep doing this for yourself. Just keep doing it for yourself, because all I do is ask you the questions and you come up with your own answers, you know. You might get on to that sometime, you know. But very nice to be with you. Namaste.